This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Listen now to a talk Ben Sirica had with Dr. Vinay Badwar, Gordon Murray Professor and Chair of Cardiovascular and Thoracic Surgery at the West Virginia University School of Medicine in Morgantown. They cover surgical ablation for atrial fibrillation, guidelines, and updates.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for asking me.
We're going to talk about surgical ablation for atrial fibrillation and specifically talk about the guideline updates. And this is obviously a topic of great interest to everybody involved with anything in the heart and vascular system. And there are now so many different techniques, debates about this. It'll be great to get your perspective from a surgical standpoint, but also trying to put it into a way that we can approach thoughtfully based on guidelines these complicated patients.
Well, I'll probably first start with saying that what's new in the last, I would say, probably 5 years, is that it's been very clear that atrial fibrillation is not a benign disease. And so when someone approaches these patients and say they need another operation or they come to surgery, to leave it alone, whether that be in a coronary patient or whether that be in a valve patient, particularly mitral valve, we have pretty definitively shown that AFib untreated versus AFib treated with surgical ablation, there is a mortality difference, not just at 30 days, but also at 1 and 2 years if it is left untreated. So that's a very important first basis, which we didn't have that data 5 or 6 years ago. And then subsequent to that and feeding into that were the existence of previous guidelines that were really our only guidelines dictating when one would add a surgical ablation to an operative procedure were based on the HRS guidelines from 2014, which basically said that, okay, if you're there to do surgery of some other sort and the patient has AFib, then it's a 2B indication, go ahead and do something. And that was the sum total.
Mm-hmm.
So the STS, Society of Thoracic Surgeons, followed by the American Association for Thoracic Surgery, followed by the most recent HRS guideline update or expert consensus statement, all have consistently now separated surgery into types of surgery. So that can be classified as open atrial surgery or closed atrial surgery. And in patients that present, for example, for a mitral operation, and you're already there, that it is a class 1 level of evidence A recommendation to proceed to do a surgical ablation. In patients that have isolated aortic valve or isolated coronary bypass grafting procedures, it is a 2A indication to proceed with a surgical ablation. And those that are standalone, in other words, those that have failed catheter ablation or a patient otherwise requests it, it is a 2A in the surgical literature and 2B in the HRS guidelines to recommend surgical ablation.
And does it have to be a full sternotomy? What about the mini AVRs?
The mini AVRs, if it's done through a sternotomy, is difficult to do a full surgical ablation. Now, one thing these guideline documents don't define somewhat intentionally because the data is not quite there, is what type of surgical ablation. And the common approach in patients with either paroxysmal atrial fibrillation or early persistent atrial fibrillation going for an aortic valve or coronary bypass grafting procedure, the thought, at least in the past, was to just do pulmonary vein isolation, which is basically an island of ablation at the foci of pulmonary veins, particularly if it's early persistent or paroxysmal. However, more and more data is coming that in patients with any form of atrial fibrillation, particularly persistent atrial fibrillation, either early or late, that a full Cox-Maze 4 lesion set is perhaps the most prudent and the most studied. The question is left atrial alone versus biatrial. That's a debate that we have in the surgical field. But in general, if you're going to do a surgical ablation as a definitive therapy on someone that has symptomatic atrial fibrillation presenting either as the sole therapy or with concomitant disease, that I think there's a large amount of opinion that would say do the full Cox-Maze 4 lesion set, that the most definitive therapy.
Is this always done with a left atrial appendage ligation?
Yes. And in our database, the vast majority of patients have left atrial appendage obliteration of some sort. The one glaring issue that has come up, there are newer procedures that do not follow a Cox-Maze 4 lesion set pattern that are done either sub-xiphoid or other types of procedures. And those do not take the left atrial appendage. Or there are some thoracoscopic procedures that are epicardially based, and they do not take the left atrial appendage. These are epicardial ablations that don't follow a traditional pattern. And the evidence of those is less good with, frankly, significant complications. And so when we think about atrial fibrillation ablation, surgically or catheter, our strategy should be the best outcome with the least morbidity.
For sure. Are there any atria that you see either by size or duration of atrial fibrillation when you say it's just not worth it?
Yeah, so that's a good question because it's gone back and forth. And what are the factors that are involved in the relapse of atrial fibrillation or the failure of surgical ablation? And really, atrial size was at one point in time thought to be the big factor. But I think the majority is probably duration of atrial fibrillation because in patients over a decade, even if it's the quote-unquote paroxysmal, if you have paroxysmal for greater than 5 or 6 years, it's persistent in terms of its mechanism. It may be paroxysmal in their symptoms, but they're all on antiarrhythmic. And these patients have a different mechanism. These are not the Hasegare-like foci in the pulmonary veins. The patients have atrial fibrosis. Mm-hmm. And those are patients that we have to be thoughtful on how we approach surgical ablation. But basically, if the atrium's calcified, if the atrium has failed multiple ablations and it's greater than 20 years, I think the merit is probably less. But pretty much anybody else has a fairly good chance at outcome from surgical ablation.
That's great. I mean, so it just to summarize, it sounds like we now have guidelines that have harmonized among the different societies, so we really can place the surgical ablation in the context so that it's getting done in those patients who really do need it with the highest indication because of the outcome benefits of ablation for those patients. And that right now, the full Cox-Maze 4 is the preferred treatment.
Correct. I think I'd leave the messages that the Cox-Maze 4 is the most studied and the most proven benefit for surgical ablation. However, there's a spectrum. And what the guidelines dictate are not based on the actual procedure, on the basis of just doing something to the patient and doing surgical ablation. Further study has to define that in the type of guideline. Now, there are some subtleties in the guidelines that define in certain types of lesions and presenting problems, then a Cox-Maze 4 has benefit over pulmonary vein isolation alone. That has to do with atrial size, etc. But in general, in mitral disease and in isolated aortic valve or coronary disease, it is an indication and it is recommended to perform surgical ablation.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for sharing your knowledge.
Thank you.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.